All right, hello, welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have Chris Sheridan on the line today. How you doing, Chris?
Happy and healthy today.
That is good to hear. and timely.
I so affirm.
timely and appropriate for our discussion today. Right. You are listening to the Cosmic Eye Show. We are here every Sunday. We also have a show on Friday, Emmett Fox Friday. So we encourage you to check those out. Those are little shorter episodes, 20, 25 minutes of what we like to say are spiritual vitamins that'll kind of pump you up and give you an idea, an Emmett Fox idea that helps you get through the week, through the weekend, whenever you listen to them. So go ahead and check those out. Thanks to all our supporters. We appreciate you guys. If you can, please support us, anchor.fm/cosmiceye. I'm, of course, the author of If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. That's going to kind of tie into what we're talking about today. And Chris is the author of The Spirit in the Sky, and also his book ties into that as well, in terms of spiritual ideas and, you know, focus of life and healing and so on. So what we're talking about today is fear, how to master fear, how to overcome fear, how to have a healthier attitude towards it and so on. It was inspired by, of course, some of the events that have occurred lately. We're in the middle of this coronavirus thing. Some of the ideas that go along with that, some of the fears that people have and how that plays into your health and so on. So, and we've got other ideas about fear and how to overcome fear, maintain health, etc. So it's going to be a great show, and it's going to be one that I think you're going to find is valuable and particularly timely. So thank you for joining us again. All right, so let's just start out with that idea of fear. They say in psychology, and I'm sure this is disputed, but this is something that's been a truism for a long time, that we're only born with two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. So that's the only two fears that an infant has. And those for an infant, obviously, are good, healthy fears. Those are instinctual fears that you need to survive. We have, I suppose, other instinctual things that, you know, that come up, and the fight or flight stuff that comes through us that, you know, is from more ancient times when we were closer to the natural world and we needed those sort of instincts to keep us alive. You know, when you hear something shuffling around behind you, or you see a flash of something, generally you get that little startle and you know, you want to run or fight. One of the two. This is the fight or flight instinct. What we're not really talking about that, because that is a natural sort of healthy instinct. That's the same sort of instinct that's going to get you the hell out of the road if you hear a truck rumbling, you know, down upon you and you just jump out of, you know, its way in the nick of time. Things like that. Those are healthy fears. We want to have those fears. We want to encourage them, because they happen on their own. But we want to allow those to unfold unimpeded, because they keep us safe, right? What we're talking about is the sort of learned fear, manufactured fear, fear and worry, anxiety, these sorts of ideas that we carry around with us that can come from the outside or come from within or come from family or come from the media, quote unquote. And we see a lot of that right now going on. We always see a lot of that going on. And there's always a pet problem or fear that, you know, that's in the news. And this obviously is, it gets eyeballs, it attracts attention, and it keeps people, you know, on the edge of their seat with what's going to happen next and so on. And, you know, the media companies need this. They need that attention, and they need those eyeballs, and they need those clicks, and they need those purchases of magazines and books and all that stuff. So, you know, it keeps the economy humming, and, you know, fear is a classic tactic of sales. So, you know, that's one of the things we need to recognize right off the bat. That doesn't mean that there's nothing true behind what they're talking about, but it means that there's an agenda and there's a sort of axe to grind and there's some benefit to be gained from the people that are spreading that fear oftentimes. Not always, but oftentimes. You know, and that's not being cynical, it's just being practical. You have to look at things and you have to think about how, you know, for example, you see with this particular situation we're in right now with this flu virus that's going around, I guarantee you there's been a spike in the purchase of hand sanitizer. And we know that there's been spikes in, you know, purchases of food stores and things like this. And, you know, I'm sure antibacterial soaps and, you know, vitamin C and probably immune system boosters and whatever else. And, you know, again, it's not bad to be prepared, and it's not bad to take things seriously. When it becomes bad is when it becomes a destructive, sort of anxious, panic-provoking sort of response. Right, Chris?
Well, yeah, it's the panic sometimes can be more dangerous and even deadly than the initial danger, yeah. Which may be very real. You know, this virus, you know, we're talking about that's happening. If somebody listens to this at a later date, we're in early March 2020. Maybe someone later on will be looking at this in a historical context. But this coronavirus, now there's a lot of misinformation. There's lack of information going around. But what really, like you're saying, is going on, it's panic buying, mm-hmm. and this panic attitude. Concerts are being canceled. Car races, even big outdoor open things,
yeah.
are being canceled. Even before there's like an epidemic. Now it's like you say, these fears can really help us be prepared. Should we be washing our hands? Yes. We should probably be doing that anyway.
Yeah, virus or no, I want people washing
maybe
their hands.
Maybe you should have a few extra rolls of toilet paper and a couple extra gallons of water around the house and a you know, few days worth of food if you live in earthquake-prone California do, or the electricity could go out for a number of them. Sure. It doesn't even have to be some calamitous conspiracy, you know, grand thing. It can just be, you know, well, you know, something happened and now we don't have water, electricity for, you know, 5 days.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Food, you know, exactly.
That's probably really smart. And this is a good time, can use a crisis or an emergency or environmental thing to be a reminder that, ooh, you know, maybe we should be a little better prepared. Even if this one didn't affect me directly, maybe the next one will, and we're going to pitch in and buy a generator for the houses on our block or something, you know, whatever needs to happen.
But that's healthy preparation. That's not, you know, fear mongering and, you know, panic and anxiety, right? This sort of state of stress, constant state of stress. That's healthy preparation, right? There's a big difference, isn't there?
Well, there is. And these preparations can be used in a practical way towards something that directly affects you, and they can solve that. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, the water gets shut off and you have drinking water for 3 days, well, you're good to go.
Yeah.
For at least three days.
For 3 days.
It wouldn't
sure.
be otherwise.
Yeah, exactly.
So it, you know, they are solutions that work. Where it gets out of hand a lot of times is when the problem is so large, you know, a pandemic mm-hmm. like this. Or we've talked about global warming and climate change mm-hmm. That takes, you know, all the countries, and we have to switch the way we do electricity and, you know, the oceans and this, and, you know, coal-fired plants and
farming
cars
and electric cars, yeah, exactly.
Green economy, and we have to retrain and new infrastructure, and it's trillions, and it's like, it's so big that we want to do something and feel like we should, but it's really out of our control. But what doesn't go away is the fear, the panic, is the anxiety.
It's out of our, let's say this though, just to go back, to step back 1 second. I think what you're saying is definitely true. It is somewhat out of our control. However, that's one of the problems with fear and with panic and with big problems, is that they seem like it doesn't make a difference what we do on an individual level. And then that makes us feel powerless, and then we don't do anything. But if each individual from the bottom up in a grassroots way started making great changes, or even small changes for that matter, in one's life, it makes these great changes to the overall problem. And see, that's where the fear and the panic will take over and say, well, there's nothing we can do, you know,
it's out of
my hands. It's God's will, kind of like we talked about on that last Emmett Fox podcast, God's will. So
this is an opportunity to maybe explore that and find out, well, what is in our control,
exactly.
And what is it that we can do, and where we should draw the line, or at least look for that line, mm-hmm. and go, this I cannot do. I'm not going to you know, cause India to change their manufacturing things.
Yeah.
But I can make choices with what I buy and where I buy things and how I do business in my life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe we can kind of get to, you know, maybe defining or clarifying.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that is the worst risk of all is, you know, it's one thing to be panic and be try to be overly prepared.
Yeah.
But to just give up and say, well, there's nothing I can do. That's that may be the worst of all.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And in you know, in terms of like a situation where there's an illness spreading or a virus or something like this or a flu or, you know, I'm reminded of, you know, not to kind of put things in perspective, you know, we're reminded of some of the other things that have happened, you know, in the near past, you know, at least over the last 10, 20, 30 years. You know, we've had bird flu, we've had we had mad cow disease way back when, we've had swine flus, we've had you know, different types of Asian flu viruses that, you know, were floating around. I mean, there's
Y2K bug.
The Y2K bug in 2000, which, you know, a lot of people are too young to remember, but that was the bug, right? Well, the world was going to collapse. I mean, they were literally saying that we were going to be living in like Road Warrior conditions or something, you know, or Mad Max conditions, you know, once all the computers blew up because they couldn't handle it. And absolutely nothing happened. Not a single thing happened, you know? And so some of these things you've got to remember, you know, and it helps to be a little bit older to have a perspective on, you know, all the crazy things that have been talked about. And again, it doesn't mean to ignore them. It doesn't mean to be foolish about stuff. It just means to put things in perspective and realize that the hype, you know, is oftentimes much worse than the actual condition. And even if, you know, something is a panic situation, for example, which I'm not saying it is, I'm saying, but even if it were, let's say there were a situation we needed to really buckle down and, you know, and make some changes and, you know, really, you know, come together as a group. That is the time when, you know, when anxiety and fear and panic have the least place, because you need strong leadership and you need to be a person who's positive and confident and a leader in his or her own life and an example for your family, your friends, for the people that maybe are ill, for example. You can hold that space for them. You know, you might be carrying that positivity and that seed of healing within yourself that they need at that moment because they're not strong enough to have that. And so if we don't do that, if we don't carry into these panic situations, positivity, love, healing, compassion, you know, strength, you know, we're not going to be able to get through them with the minimum amount of damage. And see, that's the danger of the panic. That's the danger of spreading hysteria. Mm-hmm. It's not about, you know, spreading information, say, okay, wash your hands, do this, do X, Y, Z, avoid this kind of thing, avoid that. That stuff's positive information. But then what happens after that is like, you know, the fallout from that.
Well, there's suspicion.
Suspicion and fear.
Of your neighbors, if maybe they're sick or.
Well.
And when it weakens the whole, it weakens our response ability, our ability to respond to this situation in ways that we can respond.
Exactly.
If they're compromised by worry, fear, stress, panic, doubt, uncertainty. Really, it's, I think, talking about a weakened immune system. If you're worried about the bug that's going around, okay, do what you can to be healthy. But if you continue to worry about the bug, especially if you haven't caught it yet, eventually that stress is going to weaken the immune system.
Yes.
To where you might actually catch the bug and have a hard time to fight it off. So be prepared, but at some point, stop the worry and go, I'm going to double down on serenity. And confidence.
And health thoughts.
And health, and picture health, not disease, because you know you're taking care of as much as you can. Maybe take some vitamins. You know, maybe do some of the things you should be doing anyway. We should always have strong immune systems.
Of course.
Not just when we get sick, not just when there's an epidemic. But maybe that's something we should always do. We should always wash our hands.
Yeah,
and be careful about sneezing, and, you know, sneezing your elbow, you know, what? are people used to sneezing in someone's face? Do people do that?
Yes, they do. And okay. These kinds of things, sadly enough, do need to be told to people, because unfortunately, a lot of younger people have not grown up with social mores and these kinds of niceties taught to them. They're just left to their own devices. And, you know, sometimes that can mean that they haven't learned how to do these basic fundamental things that we, you know, we older people might consider just politeness or normal behavior, because it's just not something that's been shown or taught or expected. And, you know, you can't get mad at people for not knowing that stuff. But it's good that people are starting to see these basic things that we need to be doing anyways. We should already be doing all that stuff. That you shouldn't have to tell someone to wash their hands or sneeze or do the vampire sneeze, I think is what they're saying. Like cover into your, go into your the crook of your elbow.
Of your cape.
Vampire sneeze is a good one. That's maybe the best thing that's come out of this so far. But you know, the point is though, is to, you know, take an active role, particularly inwardly, in keeping yourself healthy by keeping your mind, you know, we talked about that again in that Emmett Fox show and that quarantining the problem idea. Put it out of your mind, quarantine the idea of sickness, quarantine the idea of the flu, stop playing into it, stop spending hours and hours on the internet reading the latest statistics and worrying about it and thinking about it and so on, and put your mind on health and constructive things you can do to, you know, to stay healthy and strong. And that starts on the inside, and it starts with things like prayer and affirmation and visualization and relaxation. All those strengthen the immune system. Biochemically speaking, you know, positive thoughts have a positive effect on the body-mind structure, and negative anxious thoughts have a destructive effect on the body-mind complex. It's that simple. I mean,
well, the calming, you know, maybe the, you know, one of the most important ones of all.
Sure.
That you're just, you know, like you're talking about, you know, meditation and relaxation. Even short of instilling, you know, positive thoughts, you know, get in this no thought zone where you're trusting in the universe, mm-hmm. in your body. I am calm. I am centered. I'm surrounded by, you know, a higher force mm-hmm. and a power within me. This too shall pass, but shall be okay. Calmness is the best thing my body needs right now for a clear mind, for a strong immune system, you know, just really reinforcing, mm-hmm. You know, this calmness. And again, calmness, mindfulness, meditation, relaxation, like real relaxation, not watching, you know, binge watching Netflix on the couch. That's, you know, entertaining and leisurely, but I'm talking about where you're not even taking in images and screens.
No, exactly.
Kind of relaxation. Yeah. And being okay with that. Not that, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, but just in that space of peace and serenity.
Yeah.
That, you know, that seems like the cure for, you know, or it's part of a cure for just about everything, because it makes everything else more possible. Your mind is sharper when the real emergency strikes.
Yeah.
Your body is stronger because it's not, you know, it's the chemical we've been talking about, chemical compositions, you know, these stress. It's not just, oh, I'm stressed because I got all this stuff in my mind. No, physiologically, the hippocampus is pumping out chemicals into your bloodstream and your whole nervous system. Yeah. Digestive, you know, faculties are altered.
Absolutely.
Your ability to fight disease, your sensory. Yeah.
It's real. There's real chemical responses in the body to thought and feeling. You know,
and the relaxation produces other chemicals. It doesn't just stop the bad chemicals, it actually releases another set of chemicals. And when we get in these states, and this is the, you know, the curse of, I think, modern society, maybe it's always been with mm-hmm. us, is that a lot of these fears, even the real ones, when you go beyond the reasonable fear response and taking action, we can feel something over and over and over again, the fear of this or the resentment or the pain, mm-hmm. the betrayal that somebody caused us or the wanting to retaliate. We can think of that over and over and over again, and it has a cumulative effect. And I think that's why a lot of people are sick in general.
Yeah.
I think we already have weakened immune systems. Sure. Not just our food supply. That's part of it. It's not just an exercise thing, although that's part of it. One of the best things and quickest things you can do is in your mind. You don't even have to eat something or exercise, although you should. But if you can calm the mind and the heart and the worry and the anxiety.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's way more than half the battle right there. And then, you know, if you can go the extra mile and then actually begin to do something constructive in terms of, you know, your mind, your spirit, you know, you could create that, you create that neutral space. You know, like we talked about before, you kind of crack open the door to the possibility of something much greater, you know, allowing something bigger in and allowing that there's a consciousness that's, you know, that's larger than your little ego and things like that. You know, you start to make the space for that. And then when you do your affirmative work, your prayer and your visualization and your, you know, your feeling oriented type work to construct that healthy mindset, you know, it's much more apt to take. It's like we talked about it before, that analogy, the garden. It's like when you take that time to become calm and really clear things out and, you know, focus on the breath and get into that space where you let go of the tension, you know, release bodily tension. So it's like you're clearing out the garden of weeds and rocks and all of these things that are going to get in the way of planting those positive seeds of health, you know, and the positive seeds of health are the affirmation, the, you know, the visualizations, the prayers, the ritual that you might do, you know, that's important as well. You can do, you know, you can light a candle, you can light some incense, maybe for, you know, if you've got candles of saints or holy people and so on, you can use those sorts of things. Whatever you do to connect with that higher consciousness, you know, is valuable.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I like that notion of ritual, because if you're not really used to meditating or at least have a foothold on it, sometimes saying, well, just quit worrying and don't stress and calm your mind and be mindful. That's kind of hard because it all takes place in the same mind that you're chaotic with fear and anxiety. And then you're trying to turn that. I think one of the most awesome things about ritual, now if it's a public ritual or with a group, then you have fellowship and that sort of connectivity. Sure. But on a personal level, yes, if it's just lighting incense in a candle or holding a special rock that you picked up somewhere because it makes you feel good, a worry stone, as they say, or looking at an image or listening to a tape or something like that.
Yeah.
What it does, it's actually a physical thing. It gets you out of your head.
Yeah.
And you're busy with, well, I got to light the candle. Well, I have to, you know, sprinkle the holy water. You know, I mean, there's things to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's happening while you're doing those things is you're not thinking.
Or,
you know, it trips up.
You are thinking, but
But you're not thinking about the problem. You're not obsessing about that.
You're thinking about the solution. You know, and exactly what I talk about. And if you can worry, you can meditate, the meditation book, you know, you can, your thought can be locked into a habitual state of anxiety, or you can shift that same thought, that same sort of obsessive behavior onto thoughts of positivity, you know, love, health, compassion, and so on. And that you're right, that ritual gives us a place to be able to do that. You know, looking at mandalas or, you know, coloring mandalas are nice rituals, like putting together a little altar space for yourself, maybe putting up pictures of relatives that inspired you, or maybe your grandmother that passed that you occasionally talk to still in prayer or in visions or what have you. You know, reading positive and life-affirming and spiritual books. You know, all of these.
You're creating a sacred space. Literally a safe space. Yeah. Of mind and of your body, at least your immediate, and it could be your desk at work.
Yeah.
You know? If you can, you know, clock out and put the earbuds on, turn your computer screen off and, you know, and maybe bring out that, you may not allow to light a candle, but you can bring out a box of potpourri or, you know, whatever, something. You're you're externalizing, and then you have some other focus, and it just allows the mind to be involved with something other than whatever it is you're dealing with. And that is, can be calming. It can give you just, you know, an avenue, because you can't just turn the mind off. Yes, it's always thinking, but if you can get it involved with something, making tea.
Yeah.
I will bring up the cigarette break to which I don't think exists anymore.
I think that may be a thing of the past, my friend. Yeah.
But, you know, I used to, and here's how I think about it now. I'm an ex-smoker, I'll admit. You know, it's been a long time, but I used to think it was, well, it's the nicotine, it's the tobacco. And, you know, you go out there and, okay, I'm calm, I can chill out now. I just need a cigarette. Okay, I can focus now. But if I, you know, as I remember, there was more involved with that. You have to go outside.
Yeah.
Even, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you still had, at least they had a smoking section or something. You had to go someplace that was designated. Sure. Even before it was really stigmatized, there was still a place. And then you have, you know, this box, this little pack of cigarettes, and there's a bunch of them in there, and it has the top, and you tamp it down, and, you know, you've got the lighter, and you have to have an ashtray, and, you know, and blow a smoke ring. I mean, you're doing all kinds of things with your hands. Yeah. It's very, and I may be wrong, but in retrospect, I'm thinking that's as much of a value, in quotes, as the actual nicotine in calming you down, because you're pulled out from what you're doing, you've got something to do with your hands, and you know your breath.
No, exactly.
You're stoking in. I mean, it's kind of a breath meditation.
No,
I mean, as deadly it is for your body.
But the ritual elements, the breathing elements, the time for yourself, the time to relax that you've created that coincide with that. That's all ritualized, sort of habitualized behavior that's you've learned to associate with calming yourself down, right? You can do it, and that's the beauty of it, is you can do it without the cigarettes, without the drugs, without the alcohol. You can,
but I would suggest something with your hands, maybe knit, or juggle, or do card tricks, or some kind of, or if you have trouble using your hands, some other thing you're kind of doing with your body that involves your concentration, or at least partial concentration.
Artwork, drawings,
coloring book, notes. Anything for 5 minutes, set a timer on your, watch or
That's
something.
That's a great point,
Because it doesn't take much, actually, to trip up the thought stream. That's especially if you're in a state of worry or anxiety or anticipation or things like that. We're very distractible creatures, if that's even a word, that, like I've read The Inner Game of Tennis and Skiing from the Neck Down to try to, sports things to get out of your head, because that can be just as much of a help or a hindrance as, something you're doing with your body. And the lesson in The Inner Game of Tennis was that they were teaching students that when the ball would hit on their side of the court, they were supposed to say out loud, bounce, and then it would come to them. And when they would hit it with a racket, they would say hit. Two words, two little things to do, only takes a half a second. But it took their concentration, because they're not going to say bounce until the ball hit the ground or hit, on your side of the court. Okay, bounce, and now it's coming. And, I know I'm going to say hit. I have to say hit when I hit it. Those two words timed with those events are just enough to keep you from overthinking how you're going to hit the ball with the racket. And it was and people were just kind of naturally coming up with better strokes by not thinking about it, or not thinking about it so much.
Yeah, and and then you're anchoring that word into that positive behavior. Another way to do that too, if you want to talk about the health aspect of things, especially during times like now, is, say for example, you just are going out on a walk, maybe to get out and clear your head a little bit and breathe some fresh air and so on, and you go to the park. Well, maybe when you take a left step, you say something like health, and then on your right step, you say peace. So you just go back and forth, health, peace, health, peace. you know, when you get into this sort of repetitive sort of walking meditation type thing, you can circumvent any of those fears that you might have been really focusing on, those anxious thoughts and so on, and replace them, you know, and those repetitive kinds of things like tennis or walking or jogging or, you know, hitting a speed bag if you're into boxing, or, you know, any of these kind of repetitive sorts of things, like chopping vegetables and something, you know, or something like this. So you're chopping a carrot, you know, peace, health, peace, health, peace, health, peace, health, things like this, or whatever you want to say, you know, is a way to connect the body and mind together with a spiritual intent of creating a more healthy mindset. And it does, there's a definite effect on the body mind when you do these positive things. It's very real. It's not unscientific. And, you know, I've seen lately too, a lot of these memes and things online, you know, criticizing a lot of the new age people who are talking about essential oils and these different things and, you know, in response to this virus. And I think it's really kind of, one, it's mean-spirited, and two, I think that it's, you know, it's short-sighted, because the things that people do, these little ritualistic things that make them feel better, saging things and putting essential oils on and so on, make them feel better. And therefore, they have a higher, you know, their immune system is stronger. Their mentality is able to withstand things. Their body is actually healthier. Doing those things is positive if you believe in them. If you don't believe in them, they're of no use. But if you try them and you're like, wow, actually this does seem to work, then there's value in it, you know. But if you're skeptical about everything and you're just, you know, critical of everything, and the only thing you think is going to help you is, you know, the newest drug from Pfizer, it's a different, you know, it's a tough way to live. It's a tough way to live. And, you know, one of the challenges is that, you know, the mind often creates situations in the body that, you know, we can heal ourselves much more efficiently oftentimes than a drug, just through the types of, you know, work and things that we're talking about. It makes a huge difference. And of course we talked before about the placebo and nocebo effects and so on, but there's no scientific doubt that the mind plays a huge part of in the role of your health. And the mind, when I say mind, I mean mind, you know, mind, soul, spirit, you know, the complex of everything that we are as a human being. But it's, you know, it's sort of our touchstone to that is the ego-based thought in a lot of ways. So we've got to really be careful the types of things we're thinking, the types of things that we're doing. We've got to keep our mind firmly established on those positive, healthy, connected, relaxed, peaceful, and healing kinds of thoughts and actions and feelings, right?
Right. And, you know, something like, oh, deep breathing, you know, calming, relaxing, deep breathing. You can talk about the, you know, mental and, you know, psychological and even spiritual effects and benefits of that, but just on a simple material scientific level, you're releasing more of the spent carbon dioxide in your lungs when you breathe properly, diaphragmatically and deeply, and you're bringing in more oxygen. Therefore, your blood is going to carry a more oxygenated, you know, system all throughout your body, which is what your digestion needs. It's what your liver needs to cleanse, you know, your fluids. It's, you know, skin, everything needs this, your brain and your heart as well to operate. So it's, in a way, it's some of the stuff is kind of simple, and it's not really that much of a stretch, mm-hmm. even just on that particular level.
That's a great point.
Don't you want your doctor to be calm in surgery when they're operating on a loved one? Don't you want your airline pilot to be calm and, oh, ladies and gentlemen, we just experienced a little bit of turbulence. And meanwhile, everybody's screaming bloody murder in the back of the plane because their luggage is everywhere and the stewardess is upside down. But no, you do want them calm, especially in turbulence. True. And that's not just a metaphor. It's an actual real thing. So why wouldn't you want to be calm when facing or anticipating? And yes, in the middle of an emergency or a crisis. And I love what you said earlier about bringing that to, because not everybody can do that. But if you can and bring that, and everyone else maybe is panicking, they're in this hysteria, if you can just enter the situation, okay, it's calm, okay, we've got this. Grab the laptop, grab the kids, get the cat, we're getting out of here, the house is on fire.
Yeah, you know, if there's,
instead of, oh my God, the house is on fire. You know, if one person anyway in a group can do that, and as many of us can do that, there are going to be crises. There are real emergencies. We all have to face them, large and small, at some point or another throughout our lives.
But a calm,
Not one that has her head in her sand saying everything's fine. Not one that's in denial of what's happening and thinking it's not real, but real and present and calm and centered. Either scriptural, but
focused on this metaphor
of that,
focused on the solution
and on the, and people. On the
people. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I know this is very frightening. I can't imagine. Yes. So here's my hand. Hold on to it. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even if you're kind of lying,
well,
you know, be convincing.
Yeah. And that's part of this work is to shift that mentality, to a different state, and shift that energetic quality to a different state, so that there may be a very real fear that you're experiencing in the body, mind, you know, in your thoughts and so on, but you've got to take control and you've got to gradually shift it. And, you know, it's like, you know, there's some turbulence or something, and you're basically kind of like saying, okay, be still, and you know, you're working on the antidote instead of feeding the problem, you know. And some at first it may be very difficult. You may be still feeling those same experiences. You're like, oh, I'm still anxious. I'm still this. I'm still that. Even though I'm doing my affirmations. Even though I'm trying to relax. Even though I'm focusing on my breath. Stay with it. Stay with it, because it will work. At first, you know, it sometimes is a little difficult. Sometimes it'll be just like that. I mean, you can change, you know, quite quickly. But you know, sometimes when you're in that panic mode, you've got to take a minute and really, really, you know, flip that switch to the other feeling, to that affirmative, positive, healthy, focused, you know, constructive sort of thinking. And you know, it may take a bit to do that. So that's why I'm saying don't fear that right away. You know, you don't experience right that second. You don't experience that, you know, that thing. Stick with it, even though you know you're carrying around some deep seated stuff. It will gradually change, and it most likely much quicker than you think. But you know, stay with these practices. Stay with these practices, and have faith that they will do what they need to do for you. That's really kind of another, you know, that's half the battle. So, you know, like,
that's a really good point. That it may be gradual, because some of these fears, that maybe not an immediate one or imminent one, but a lot of times they have built up, or they've increased over the years. Mm-hmm. I'm more and more wary of this, or more frightful of that, or you know, less confident or uncertain about these things, that sometimes, you know, has been built up. So it may take a little bit to diffuse the situation and change it around. But even if you get 1 minute of calm experience in a day, well, maybe tomorrow you'll get 2 minutes, or you can at least get that 1 minute back.
Yeah,
you know. So anything to get a foothold, and but yeah, good point. Don't expect, you know, although yes, it can always happen.
It may be instantaneous. I mean it's quite incredible.
Don't,
you don't want to place limitations,
but don't push
you
it either.
Place limitations on what's possible. But my point is, it also that's just kind of occurred to me, is that, you know, the important thing is to stay conscious and watch the thoughts and feelings and emotions and daydreams and, you know, fantasies and fears that are drifting up, and counteract them in the moment. So it's one thing to take 5 minutes out of your day and do some positive visualizations, and then for the rest of the 8 hours or 9 hours of your day, you're, you know, you're looking up stuff online, worrying about this and watching that, and tallying up statistics and doing, you know, calculations on what the possibilities of you catching this or that thing and all these ridiculous things, that's feeding the problem. It's feeding the problem. So during those times, catch yourself, stop yourself, and say something like, you know, I'm healthy, I'm happy, I'm strong. You know, even though it sounds kind of corny, these kinds of things work. And with conviction and with repetition, they will do that. They will turn that thought. They will turn that feeling.
They already are.
They already are.
If you're saying, I'm afraid, I'm worried, I'm anxious, unconsciously or unconsciously, or I don't know how I can handle this. This is overwhelming. This is bigger than me. You're really saying I'm weak.
Yeah, no.
Over and over. That. And you've developed that. So saying I'm happy and strong and confident, it's no sillier than everything else. You've probably been unaware, but that you have been reaffirming and reaffirming and reaffirming. Yeah. And you're right. It's the consciousness. If you can become then aware, even if you're not doing it right yet, to speak, if you become aware that you're not doing it right, that is a really big step in the right direction. Because a lot of the times, and actually where it really becomes dangerous, where these things have become habitual ways of thinking, it's become a normalized level. You know, what do they call it? General anxiety
disorder
or something like that. Mm-hmm. That is, you're just what are you anxious about? Well, what do you got?
Yeah.
You know? Or you don't even need anything.
Well, they,
that's habitual. It's been repeated and repeated. And it below the level of consciousness or at least conscious awareness.
Yeah.
So to become aware, like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Oh my God. I was thinking about, you know, tearing this, you know, person's head off who cut me off in traffic. And it's like, whoa, I wasn't that victimized. I don't need to lash out. That's terrible. But if you recognize your terrible thoughts, wow, you've got a grip on them now. They don't have a grip on you. And then you can go about changing, saying, well, maybe I should think about something else. But yes, being consciously aware, and that's present moment awareness of your own thoughts and where they're going.
Yeah, yeah.
So try to catch
Absolutely.
That.
And, you know, there's a great power in affirmation and prayer. I mean, it's the connection to your higher self. It's your connection to the source, you know, the divine mind. And, you know, you've got to do that affirmatively. We talked about that before. You've got to send the right messages, you know, because prayer is like, it's like thought in a lot of ways. It's one of these things where you get out what you put in. And so, you know, if you're praying in sort of negative and non-deserving and kind of guilty and, you know, meek in a negative way, sort of ways, you're not claiming the good and the health and the consciousness and the vitality and the, you know, prosperity and so on, whatever that you're looking for. You know, that's a weak prayer. It's like a weak thought. And you get out what you put in. And so it's crucial for you to you know, affirmatively state things like, I thank you, you know, universal spirit for the blessings in my life, for this health and for my, you know, that my family's protected and that we're surrounded by your, you know, your love and protection at all times and things like that. That's an affirmative type prayer. And we've talked about that many times on many shows. It's very important to do that if you're going to pray. And it's very important to affirm those things positively to yourself if you want to make those changes. And I want to kind of get into some of the specifics of what you might do, you know, to kind of counteract some of these fears and to keep yourself healthy and so on. And of course, I'm going to go to one of my favorite preachers, Reverend Ike. And I'm looking at health, joy, and prosperity for you. So in chapter 40, there's a lot of great information. He calls it How to Stop Catching Disease. And it's a really, really short but very poignant chapter, very powerful stuff in here. So we're going to go through a little of this super, super quickly because we're, you know, nearing the end of the show. But this, I just want to read this, and I want you to think about this because I think this is something we take for granted. Most people have been mentally conditioned to accept sickness from the beginning of their lives. From the minute you are born, you are taught to believe in sickness. You learn that you are supposed to be sick at certain times of the year. You learn that you are supposed to be sick at various times of your life. You learn to believe in the very idea of sickness. Health or sickness, wealth or poverty, success or failure, all begin in the mind. Your physical body and material affairs reflect the state of mind. The person with a positive attitude and a strong belief in health prevents sickness from entering his life. So, you know, he's really getting at the heart of this thing when he says that. How, you know, just stop and think about how many times you've seen a commercial that's suggesting sickness and then suggesting a solution to you. How often you see that in a show, how often you hear it from your doctor or from your friends, how often you're looking for symptoms and then looking for the pharmaceutical solution or the allopathic medical solution to that problem. It's just, it's this thing like with TV in a sense, like, I mean, and you can look back on the history of TV, and one of the things it was designed to do was sell products. So they would show disturbing news and then they would have a commercial for aspirin right after all the disturbing news, because the news gives you a headache. It creates the problem, right, and then it sells you the solution. Yeah. And it's not to knock the media, right, but that is one of the, it's the one of the foundations of free television. Honestly, you can look back and read the history.
And it is honest. It's not conspiratorial. A conspiracy. You're right. It's just good or bad. It's honest. Soap operas.
Exactly.
It's to sell Procter & Gamble. Yeah.
But not only that.
That's why they're called soap operas.
They're selling you all the misery and frustration and betrayals and drama, and then selling you alcohol and cigarettes and drugs to solve those problems during those commercial breaks. So they're giving you the fears and the, you know, Reverend Ike would talk about that, speaking of him again. And he would talk about all the, and they all, you know, all the, I can't even, let me think of one of these soap operas, Edge of Night and the Darkness of Something. And there's all these different things. And there are all these really dramatic, scary, you know, sort of ideas and, you know, really churned up emotional, dark, destructive things that people do to each other. And then, you know, the commercials sell you the solutions. It's, you know, it's not that complicated. Watch television with that in mind even today, and you'll see what I mean. It is not a conspiracy theory. It's not some kooky, it's classical advertising and propaganda that goes back to the turn of the century, the early 1900s, 1920s. I mean, this is the stuff that they used, you know, to sell patent medicine. This is not a conspiracy. It's just the way it works. So you've got to be wary of that. You know, sickness is sold to you all the time. Do you want to buy it or do you not want to buy it? I don't want to buy it. How about you, Chris? I'm not buying it. This is where it runs the hell out. You know,
and it's systemic though. It's not, it goes way beyond advertising.
It is. It's not
selling
just
products. It's the healthcare system. It kind of is a sick care system. It's to, you know, we like to treat symptoms. Yeah. It's not really, you know, in Chinese medicine, or at least some apothecaries and practices, if you see your doctor and he gives you a clean bill of health, you pay him. Mm-hmm. Because that's what he's there for, to help keep you healthy. Yeah. You pay him. The more healthy you are, the more you pay him. You get sick, And the bill's on him or her.
Yeah.
Because they failed in some way, or that relationship failed between the herbs and the advice.
Well, they're gonna give you exercises and they're gonna give you all kinds of different things that you need to do, meditations and different prayers and different things you're gonna have to do. And you would do them. And if you didn't do them, then you weren't following the doctor's orders. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't even do that, because oftentimes, like, the doctors, you know, even this is not to knock Western medicine, and this is not to knock the media when I say these things. You know, oftentimes doctors, Western doctors, will tell you, get more exercise, stop doing this, stop doing that. People don't listen. They just want the drug. Okay, sure. Just give me the prescription so I can still eat the bacon and I don't have to actually exercise. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, there you go. So I think they probably get frustrated after a while of even saying all the stuff that you need to do, you know, change your diet, get some exercise, de-stress. I mean, a lot of them are even saying, you know, meditate, do, you know, take some yoga, do some positive things for yourself. So you've got to take the advice if someone gives it to you. That's the other side of the coin. So, all right. So we'll
listen to what we've got to say by God. Come on.
I'll tell you.
Well, I wouldn't say if it hasn't worked for me. All of this stuff, right? I mean, I'll admit I'm 55 and I feel like I'm in good health and shape. I've been in a wheelchair over 25 years with paralysis, and yeah, I've been as healthy as anybody else I know my age, if not more. And I've had drug and alcohol addiction and years smoking cigarettes and all kinds of stuff. And you know, and I feel pretty good
because you do most these days, things we're talking about, and so do I. And that's, you know, that's the thing.
And I wouldn't say it otherwise if I wasn't living it. Now, I'm not saying I'm a vegan and everything I do is 100% right, or I'm have a green, thing going on. I'm conscious of that, and I do. But I also live in the world, and if I hit a drive-through, I hit a drive-through. But I also don't worry about it. You know, some of the people that are health conscious, you know, when they bring the scales to the restaurant and weigh their, you know, croutons in their salad and all this stuff, it's like, yes, you're kind of doing the right thing, but if you're really, really worried about counting every calorie, actually that worry might be worse for you than, you know, a couple extra tomatoes on your.
No, it's true. It's true. And that's, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road, really. It's like, you know, it is, look, we're all doing our best, you know, try and incorporate, you know, changes in as best you can. You know, none of us are perfect. Don't beat yourself up, but do try to be better. We live in the world. Expect more.
Yeah. Make it fit in the world in your life, but also be willing to make some changes. And I just wanted to touch on, we're talking about replacing negative, you know, habitual thoughts that may have a long history, you know, with these new positive ones or stop something or, well, I'm sick, but I'm supposed to be thinking health. A lot of us can have trouble with that disconnect or feel that there's a disconnect. My bank account is drained, but I'm trying to visualize prosperity. Mm-hmm. Health is, you know, difficult, but I'm trying to imagine how can both be true or something like that. And both things can be true. And the technique, again, speaking of things that we use, is one I've used a lot in a lot of different contexts, but in similar types of things, is the even though statement. So you say, even though I'm really feeling sick and tired, I have a picture of health in my mind, and I have a connection with what, you know, breathing easy and moving easy in the world, you know, would feel like. So you're not really seeing one thing and saying it's not true. You're not really, you know, imagining some fantasy thing and ignoring what, you know, in quotes, I would say is real or reality. You're acknowledging that. But even though, when you say even though, what you're saying is, yeah, this is true, but this is even more true. So acknowledge the thing, because, you know, that way it's, you don't have to have this.
Yeah, the only thing I would be concerned with, don't acknowledge the thing too much, because then you're just
no.
You know, my life is shitty, my life is great, and you've just canceled everything out. So make sure you lean on the positive side after you.
And you could say, even though it, you know, it seems, even though at the moment it appears that I have.
That's fantastic. That's powerful.
Yes. But I do have a wealthy mentality. I do have a healthy, you know, vision for myself. That it's temporary, transitory, and there's
that's a great idea. Thing.
So, yeah, that's.
I was thinking, as you were saying that, too, I was almost thinking of the idea, too, of like, you know, if you think of the metaphor of a blueprint or the metaphor of like rehabbing a house, it's like, yeah, the old house is there still, but it's like, I'm creating a whole new way of doing things, you know? So you acknowledge the thing that's there, but then you're also saying, you know, these thoughts are a blueprint for my new success and for this next level that I'm taking myself to. And those, you know what I mean? Yeah. Something like that. So there's an acknowledgement there as well.
Well, good point. What if your car's dirty? Yeah. Oh my gosh, my car's dirty. What do you do? Do you actually sit there and go, well, my car's dirty. Yeah. There it is.
That's just how it is.
Just, No, you can see that your car is dirty, and that can actually give you the inspiration to go to the car wash. But you know in your mind you're going to be able to wash it, and you will have come home with a clean car. It's sparkly and shiny. And so you do that in our everyday lives. So let's apply that same kind of logic that actually works to some of these
areas. You know, circling back to the main point of this, so when there's fears, it's a sign that you need to strengthen your faith, strengthen your consciousness, strengthen your, your confidence in yourself.
Wash
your hands. Yeah. But I mean, honestly, it's like, do the things and then remind yourself, even as like, if you've got a little ritual, washing your hands or, you're doing this or that thing to try to keep yourself healthy. Remind yourself, like, I'm healthy in mind and spirit as well. I'm healthy in my soul. And have like an affirmation or, the universe's healing presence surrounds me as I wash my hands or something along those lines. You can connect the mind and body together, right? So
I'm cleaning my thoughts as I'm washing my hands. I'm rinsing off the dirt as I'm releasing my negative attitudes.
Absolutely.
We have time right together. It's literally mind-body. Yeah,
mind-body experience. Going on. So don't panic. Don't, allow the anxiety to overwhelm. Be a calmness in the center of a storm and carry that calmness and health and strength for the people that are around you that need you, your kids, your family, your students, your coworkers, etc. There's real quickly, I'll touch on this. There's this idea of this thing called the Maharishi effect. They did this study where they meditated in, I think it was back in the 80s when there was a huge crime problem in Washington, D.C. And I think it's still pretty bad, but in the 80s, it was awful. And they sent X number of meditators to go and see if they could bring down the crime rate by just meditating. And they did a study on it. You can check it out. Maharishi effect. Maharishi University did it, actually. And they had so many people meditating. And they actually found that they brought crime down during the time that they were meditating. There's actual statistics that show that crime came down. They replicated the study in multiple cities, and it happened everywhere they went. So if people meditating in a city can bring down crime, then your thoughts definitely will have a huge effect on the people around you, and you can help bring the health level and the positivity up around you. We're a vibrational center, and we want to vibrate positivity, love, health, prosperity, and so on, especially for those who need it the most. That's part of being a healer and being a good member of a community. If you have the capacity to do that, and most of us who are listening to this are those kinds of people, I would argue all of us probably are. We want to make changes. We want to be beacons of light. We want to share. Try this out and just radiate out this peace and health during times of challenge, times of crisis, times of panic, and be an anchor, be a beacon of hope for others, right? So,
and don't underestimate your power. Even if, I'm not a shaman, I'm not a level 9 healer.
Wait a minute. How do I get that level 9 healing, by the way? Are you offering a deal on that right now? Because that sounds pretty cool.
If you're just a little bit better or a little bit calmer than the person next to you, then you're going to help a little bit. Don't underestimate how powerful your vibrations and your thoughts and what you have and what you know, what confidence you have, how much that can really help somebody.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. Sometimes it's the littlest thing. So don't underestimate.
Don't underestimate the divinity within yourself and the divine power that exists within you. That's beyond, your little ego and your little body, right? That's a big one too, is allow that to unfold and spread out and really, really take charge as well. Jung would call that the self with the capital S. They would call that in India the self with a capital S. That higher self, that higher part of yourself that's connected to the big consciousness, So give that a chance to shine. All right, I'm going to give a few of these affirmative treatments. If you want to go to 217 with me, Chris, we can go through these and maybe just go back and forth. This is These are just the last little thing we're going to offer you, just to kind of, these are some affirmations you can use from the great Reverend Ike that'll help keep you healthy and help keep your mind strong, your heart strong, and your soul strong. All right, so we'll start with affirmative treatment here. Right here and right now, I see myself as a healthy person.
I refuse to accept any idea of sickness. And I will just add, like, accept, that's fully accept it and fully integrate
it. Not allow it to root. You don't let it root into your mind. Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't mean deny sickness, but accepting it means opening the door and inviting it in.
And let it stay. Because it's a bad house guest. Get it the hell out. My faith and belief are in God's healthy, whole idea of me. And this belief will keep me well.
God in me is my health. And I will add that this whole idea, healing and wholeness, you think holistic, it comes from the same root word. If you're not whole, you're not healthy. If you are whole, they go together. So think of completeness and wholeness, not, I'm sick and I'm lacking health.
No. Wholeness. I like your notes.
A little note there, but it's just a little.
I love that one. God in me is my health. I use that one all the time, and I've probably said that in 5 or 6 of the shows we've had lately. I've been using that one. And that's a strong one. The next one is, God in me heals me and keeps me well.
Wow. Isn't that what Jesus said? It's not me who doeth the works. Yeah.
God in me heals me.
And then thank you, God in me, for health.
That's probably the most important one. Gratitude.
This gratitude.
Amen. That's the big one.
Even before you receive
That's the big one.
Wow. Receive. That's what you want to receive.
Absolutely. As a
guest. Not a guest, a permanent residence in your heart.
Those are all powerful affirmative treatments that you can use when you're trying to keep your mind right. And I would highly suggest those. Another one that's really great, and then we're gonna shut down for the day, finish up the show, is the 23rd Psalm. So if you just look that up in the Bible, that's a classic Psalm. A lot of soldiers use that. A lot of people under duress use that one. That is, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So we're getting biblical up in here. Amen. That is Psalm 23, and that is a powerful one. So that, I mean, if you're a biblical bent, of a metaphysical bent towards those words, I would highly suggest memorizing that. That's a powerful one. So, all right. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for all of your sage advice today, Chris. I appreciate that, as I do each week. And
absolutely.
Keep your wits about you. You know, they say the only thing to fear is fear itself. What was that? That was Roosevelt, right? FDR.
FDR, I think, yeah.
You know, sometimes, as we said, the fear is much worse than the situation that one is being fearful of. So keep your minds right. Thank you again for joining us on the show. Thank you for supporting us. We're at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. And if you want to support us there monetarily, we would greatly appreciate it. I'm your host, Jason Abalatano, the author of If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. Chris is the author of The Spirit in the Sky. We're here each week on Sunday and Friday with new episodes. So please join us. Have a great week. Stay positive, healthy, and strong. Use those affirmations. Goodbye, and God bless.